This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 222 for the week starting 17 June 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, SA's premier tech news website and podcast network.
On Talk Central this week, Lars Reichelt joins us from Switzerland.
In the news this week, Liberty hacked as cyber criminals demand ransom, load shedding is back, Vodacom versus MTN over best network claims, and US net neutrality rules expire.
It's Sunday, we're live on live.techcentral.co.za, and it's time to talk everything technology.
Well, how's it, Reinhard? How are you doing?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So, all the way from Switzerland today, we're very, very pleased to be joined by Lars Reichelt, the former CEO of Cell C. Lars, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm very excited to be on your show.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to have you here. Lars, you resigned from Cell C, I think it was in 2011 now? Or 2012?
2011.
2011. Okay, it's been a long time, actually. It feels like just the other day you were running Cell C. What have you been up to in the intervening period?
I have been up to what I love doing most, which is trying to help operators and boards to, you know, innovate, to righten the ship. So I've been to Georgia. I've been to Nepal last year. And I'm doing a lot of work with startups, from data storage companies to IoT security companies. And it's not only telecoms, but still that's my main purpose in life seems to be telecoms.
Telecoms, right. And have you been back to South Africa since you left?
Unfortunately not, no, yeah. I haven't.
Okay, okay.
But I've been following it closely because it still is a country that is very close to my heart.
Yeah. What's your views generally on the South African situation as what I suppose I could call you an outsider now? You're watching the country, watching the political developments. I'm sure watching the developments in the telecommunications market here. What's your sort of broad strokes take on what's happening in South Africa?
Well, I'm extremely happy and pleased for South Africa and South Africans with the political change that has happened. A nightmare that is now at least can be tackled. I think Ramaphosa has his hands full, but if anybody can do it, it's probably him.
Yeah.
I would just warn that the damage that was done over the last couple of years is so massive that it will take, unfortunately, a lot of time to righten that ship, and it will probably test the patience of people in a very severe way, but you can't rush cleaning it up.
Yeah. And the telecoms market, are you interested in how it's developed, how your former company has progressed since you left, how the competitive situation is shaping up?
I'm obviously following that still. Still have lots of friends, you know, in the telco sector. I have to say that, you know, Vodacom has done an absolutely stellar job. While the others were fighting, you know, whatever they were doing, Vodacom essentially put the foot down to the metal and really accelerated far away from all of the other competitors. And they have done all the right things. I think Shamil has done a very, very remarkable job and his whole team. Mm-hmm. And I think they're providing, from what I hear, extremely good service. Prices have come down, so people can afford data, which they couldn't before. So I think MTN is also on a good track. Cell C, not sure if they have found their mojo, if they know what they want to be. They seem to be a bit uncertain about that. And Telkom, again, a good job in restructuring, but still not quite clear that they can, you know, really compete with a Vodacom in the long run.
Do you think there needs to be some consolidation in this market? I mean, we saw Telkom try to do that radio access sharing agreement with MTN that was blocked by the competition authorities. Then Telkom launched what I think was probably a bit of a cheeky bid to buy out Cell C, and that eventually went to Blue Label Telecoms and Net One. Do you think there's a need for some consolidation in this market, or do you think the level of competition we see here is sufficient and good, and we have a functioning market?
I think the regulator, and this can be the Competition Commission, this can be ICASA, this can be the Ministry of Telecoms, not only in South Africa but around the world, have to really look hard and think through what do we want. Do we want a market that is working with competitors that have sufficient financial stability to compete effectively? And that has a couple of ramifications. One, I think network sharing, RAN sharing, national roaming deals should be absolutely the order of the day. Mm-hmm. They should be made easy because there is no sense in competing, if you want, on building towers, particularly not with building permits taking forever and unclear regulation. I think the only way you can do this properly is sharing, just like we share the infrastructure of the internet. And this is the same thing. So infrastructure sharing should be made very easy. The other thing is frequencies should be not given out by asking a lot of money, but they should be given out by asking for coverage requirements that should be met very quickly. And if these two things are met, then I think you will have a healthy competition. In the early days, competition was infrastructure based. Now, competition is based on experience, is based on a telco being more than just an access provider, but a platform for other things. And the world is moving increasingly towards mobile first. And therefore, you know, all the impediments to making mobile, you know, the easiest and most accessible way of getting to the internet have to be removed.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the government's wholesale open access network proposal? It's been heavily criticized, particularly by MTN and Vodacom, and welcomed by some of the smaller players, including Cell C and Telkom, with some slightly different views on exactly how it should work. The big guys argue this hasn't been tried anywhere else in the world. It's risky. We'll support it in a hybrid model, but it might not work. What's your view of a WOAN? Have you seen a WOAN anywhere else in the world in your work that has been successful? And do you think it might be a successful project here in South Africa?
I have not seen a publicly run open access network that works, and I don't think it can. Simply because governments are meant to govern, and that alone is pretty hard. To build an enterprise in a market and run that enterprise well is very, very difficult. And if you look all around the world, whenever you have taken government-owned enterprises and set them free, then either they went under or they flourished. But if you want an example of how not to do it, I think you just can look at all the government-owned enterprises in South Africa, mm-hmm. and you tell me one that is working well. I don't think we'll find one. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very, very bad idea to have a government-operated access network. It is an experiment that is bound to fail, and it would be much, much smarter for the government to think through how can we make sure that all the framework that we need to build, from regulation to building permits to rights of ways to whatever else there is, can be made as conducive and as intelligent, as frictionless as possible, and emphasize that effort rather than trying to build their own network.
Right, right. They have said they want it to be a private sector-led initiative. They just want to create the framework in which this will operate. But I hear you. It is, at the end of the day, a construct of the government. And And I can't think of anyone that's been successful anywhere. I think Mexico's tried it, Rwanda's tried it, but nothing that's been particularly successful. We should get into the news, but before we do that, Rehot, shall we do our quiz? Do you want to do the first question?
Yes, indeed. Okay, first question of this week's quiz. Eskom introduced stage one load shedding this week. When was the last time Eskom forced to load shed? We're just looking for the year, sorry.
The year. Easy question. What was Vodacom Group CEO Shamil Jusup's total pre-tax remuneration for the 2018 financial year? And we'll accept answers to the closest million rand.
Third question. A Martian dust storm covering a quarter of the planet threatens to end a 15-year exploration mission by the NASA rover. What is the name of that rover?
And the fourth question this week. A U.S. court this week allowed the acquisition by which giant U.S. telecoms company of which giant U.S. media company?
And the final question. Former Cell C CEO Lars Reichelt, who left the mobile operator in 2011, joined which Georgian telecoms operator in 2012?
That is not an easy question. Maybe Lars can drop a hint as we talk through the show today. But let's dive into our news this week, and there's plenty of talk to talk about. And Lars, please feel free to jump in at any time with your views on any of these stories. But a story that broke late last night, I think it must have been around 10:30 last night, after we stopped playing games online, Rehot. Liberty.
I see you wrote the story very quickly right after that.
I did, yeah. Liberty sent out an SMS to its clients and started reporting on Twitter that it had been hacked, or suspected it had been hacked by cyber criminals who were demanding a ransom in return for them not leaking this information onto the internet. The Sunday Times subsequently reported early this morning that the cyber criminals, according to their sources, are demanding millions of rand in settlement. Otherwise, they will release customer information. They haven't specified what customer information onto the internet. And the Sunday Times was quoting the source at Liberty as saying that their IT team were running around like headless chickens trying to figure out exactly what happened. So, yet another major cybersecurity incident. It seems they're becoming all too commonplace here in South Africa, Rehot.
Yeah, I think it shows you how vulnerable so many of these big corporates are. I mean, if I look at the insides of many of the companies I've worked with, you know, it's not always a very simple, straightforward system that they've set up. And that's part of the problem here. There's, I think, a lot of access points to many of these systems in many cases.
Yeah, and it must certainly be, I mean, to see this on the front page of a national newspaper must certainly be a wake-up call to many IT directors and CEOs who perhaps take cybersecurity a little too complacently. You know, this is a very serious incident. You've got some criminals here, and that's what they are, basically shaking down a JSE-listed company and telling them, you know, you pay us or we publish all your clients' information online. It's a very, very serious situation, probably more serious than some of the other leaks that we've seen over the last little while, which were probably just the result of negligence more than anything else. This is a deliberate cyber intrusion and an attempt to shake down a company.
Yeah, this certainly isn't good. And I'm looking at the kind of information Liberty would likely have on people, you know, on their customers. It could be potentially devastating in many ways.
Yeah. So Liberty has announced that they're going to be putting out a statement sometime later today, where they hopefully will be providing a lot more detail as to what exactly has happened, how their customers have been affected or may be affected, and what they're doing to rectify the situation. It's going to have to be quite a detailed statement, I think, to put users' concerns at ease. And of course, this is a listed company, and if they're not seeing to be dealing with this issue in the correct way, we could see an impact on their share price when markets open tomorrow. So, yeah, I'm not sure there's too much else to be said on Liberty. So let's talk about load shedding instead. Sorry, Rehot?
No, I said, it's not a good situation either way.
Yeah. So, Lars, you must be quite pleased that you're in Switzerland, because load shedding is back as of, when did it start? Thursday or Friday this week? I think it was Thursday evening. Yeah. I got load shed on Friday just as I was finishing work, around 4:30. The power went off for about 3 hours. So, of course, all is the result of the of the strike that workers, Eskom workers have gone on after management said that there would be a wage freeze, no increase in 2018. We all know, we've seen the statistics about how much Eskom workers are paid. The average salary at Eskom is sitting at around the 770,000 rand mark, which would suggest, you know, unless the senior management is being paid exorbitant figures, which they may well be, it would suggest that Eskom employees are generally pretty well-paid people. Yet they have gone on a national strike, and have there have been incidents, according to Eskom, of sabotage and intimidation. This has impacted the a number of their power plants, particularly on the Mpumalanga Highveld, which is where a lot of their coal-fired power stations are located. And the result of that was that as of Thursday evening, Eskom started stage one load shedding. This continued into Friday. Thankfully, it does seem to have settled down this weekend. I don't think there's been any end to the industrial action, though, so we may be back into a load shedding situation once again from Monday, once demand from industry picks up again. But, yeah, have you been hit by it at all, Rehat?
No, fortunately not. I mean, at the office we've got generators, so they do kick in. But I haven't experienced it, not in this bout. There's been talks about it all over the neighborhood, the local chat groups. So a lot of the neighborhoods around me here in the Parks area have been hit. But yeah, it's how can you demand a wage increase if that average salary is relatively good? And I'm not saying people don't deserve it, but you know, generally South Africa is in a pretty tight space at the moment.
And Eskom itself is in a very serious situation. They're basically bankrupt. They've got so much debt on their balance sheet that they're going to have to go through some serious restructuring and probably retrenchments. And if they were to hike the salaries by the amount the unions are demanding, which is 15%, then that's probably just going to make the pain even worse down the road when it comes to those retrenchments.
And didn't I read you, you wrote somewhere that the staff count they have now is more than what it was 10 years ago, but the capacity output or something like that, it hasn't changed much.
That's right. I forget the exact figure, but it was something along the lines of Eskom having, you know, something like 60 or 70% more workers now than they did 10 years ago and producing the same amount of electricity. So in other words, the productivity factor has gone down massively. But it's,
I see, that's a massive problem.
It is. Lars, it must be quite a challenge as a telecommunications operator. I think you left the country before the big load shedding started to happen here. But it mm-hmm. must be a real challenge for a mobile operator to keep its network operational in an environment where there are rolling blackouts. And we obviously saw this back in 2015, 2016, when the situation was very serious and we were up to stage four load shedding at some points. But, you know, rolling blackouts must make running a network operation very, very challenging.
It is extremely challenging. You know, when I was in South Africa, we tried to put generators at every single new base station, but these generators are extremely costly. You have to refill them with fuel. It's a real, you know, it's a nightmare. And I think the only way you can go against that is to actually run as much of solar power, wind power, if possible, mm-hmm. if that's possible in the country. So for example, I was working in Nepal with an operator, and we were investigating to put wind power there, but that wouldn't work because the wind speeds would be too high, and essentially there would, you know, it would be not possible. But solar looked quite good, in particular because the new equipment requires less power. Mm-hmm. So you could run solar panels new proper batteries, not the old car batteries that we used to have, which are extremely and don't have a lot of power reserve, but modernly built. But it's a real challenge, yes. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
Yeah. I remember looking in the MTN annual report, I think it was last year's annual report, about the amount of diesel that they consume. I don't have the figures in front of me here, but it was absolutely astonishing. Not so much here for South Africa, but their operations elsewhere in Africa, like Nigeria, for example, where the network actually, a big chunk of it runs on diesel all of the time, just because there is no electricity supply or no reliable electricity supply. And the figures were staggering about how how much diesel they consume. So this also has a very direct impact on the environment, because this is a dirty industry in developing markets where electricity is not readily available.
Well, not only the diesel itself, but actually the truck rolls to get the diesel to the stations, yeah, or to the base stations. The other one is protecting the tanks at the base stations from having shrinkage, so to speak. It adds a whole layer of complexity that is quite difficult to manage. And again, probably the best way is to use solar power. Use battery packs, because that makes life a lot easier. But it's still quite expensive, and not many operators are willing to go that route. But a lot of them start doing it in earnest, because the long-term return on investment is much better.
And I'd imagine this has an impact on the costs for operators as well, which are ultimately passed on to consumers in the form of higher tariffs.
Yeah. Or, well, I'm always amused when people talk about higher tariffs. I think the telecoms industry is the only one that hardly ever sees higher tariffs. Everybody else can say, we have inflation, we have this, we have that, we have a higher cost structure, so therefore we're going to raise prices. It hardly ever happens in the telecoms industry. So I think, in fairness, price rises by telcos are not really happening. So it's essentially you have to become more efficient.
Yeah, eat the costs and grow the customer base to ensure that you can maintain that bottom line, I suppose.
Well, you have to work. I mean, I think this is the big challenge for all operators going forward. How do I reduce my CapEx while the demand on the networks are getting higher and higher? And how do I reduce my OPEX? Because if you look at the fixed costs an operator has, they are very, very high. Mm-hmm. And there is very little, you know, it requires some very, very astute management to bring those costs down. And it's not easy.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. And I'm sure the local telcos were watching with horror as load shedding returned this week. 3 years since it last happened. Obviously, the regular blackouts that we see, but the rolling blackout situation must have caused some consternation for the CEOs of the respective mobile operators here, I have no doubt. We need to take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. BitCo.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Hello? I know you're there. Look, I can see the lights of the TV. Please, I just want to watch the finale. Come on, guys, I'll give you a foot massage or anything.
Time to get your own fiber? Speak to Vox. Because for a limited time period, you can save up to 3,000 Rand in installation costs. And we'll send a technician to help you get set up.
Hello?
Go to vox.co.za. Get fiber to your home. Get free installation and activation. Open the door to endless entertainment.
T's and C's apply.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rechard? How's it, Lars?
How's it?
How's it? How's it from Switzerland? What else do we need to talk about this week? Vodacom versus MTN. This is a really interesting story. I think we spoke about it in the show last week, Rechard, if I'm not mistaken. The ASA, the Advertising Standards Authority, and I think Lars will remember the Advertising Standards Authority quite well, given some of the battles that he faced there.
Somewhat.
Some of the battles you faced at the ASA. 4GS comes to mind. For great speed, I think it stood for, right?
And for great service, exactly.
Great service. So Vodacom and MTN have been at it at the ASA. Just very briefly, Vodacom ran some print ads back in January of this year in which they said they had the best network, and underneath in small types said based on the South African Consumer Satisfaction Index report, SACSI. And MTN took this to the ASA saying, actually, we've been saying in all our advertising over the years that best network is a measure of network performance and network speed. Vodacom has suddenly changed the rules of the game here. This is not fair. And so they went to the ASA. The ASA found in Vodacom's favor, and MTN then took that on review to the ASA tribunal, where the original decision of the ASA was overturned. This happened about a week ago. So big celebrations at MTN. Vodacom can no longer say in its advertising that it has South Africa's best network. So I was rather surprised when I picked up my copy of the Sunday Times today and saw right at the front of the newspaper a very large advertisement from Vodacom saying South Africa's best network, with a little asterisk next to it, and underneath says based on the South African Consumer Satisfaction Index survey. So I'm not sure what Vodacom is doing here exactly, but it certainly would appear at face value anyway to me that Vodacom is in breach of the decision of the tribunal. I haven't got comment from Vodacom yet on whether they've changed the wording slightly in that they perhaps now feel that they can get away with saying they've got SA's best network based on the SACSI survey findings. But certainly at first glance, it looks to me like Vodacom has broken the ruling of the tribunal. So I expect that the next step will be for MTN to go back to the Advertising Standards Authority and to seek sanctions against Vodacom, which is the next step in this process usually. Interesting fight. I do wonder, though, Lars, whether consumers really care. This seems to be big egos at play here about who can claim to be the best network. Does it really matter?
I think it does matter that you have a very good network, and I think statistically you can actually see if an operator has a better network, he will earn more money and he will have a better market share.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it matters to the consumer if the company says, I have the best network. My take on the ASA, I think, has always been that I find it a rather strange institution, and you know, if you look over the years at the things that are brought or had been brought to the ASA, you know, more often than not, you wonder why should anybody rule on this? But I think it does matter that you know, you have a network that works for customers, but then again, you know, a mobile network, is people tend to forget, it's a bit like light, and where there is light, there's also shadow. And you can have a fantastic network, but in the corner of your house where you normally make a phone call, it just doesn't get there. So therefore, you know, the experience is not that good. I think it's for everybody to figure out for himself, you know, does it work for me or not? And coming back to the original discussion we had about sharing networks, I think it is quite helpful to actually share network infrastructure, and for example, in a simple way, allow national roaming, because that makes the network better for everybody, which in turn means everybody is going to use it more, and you know, then you don't have the issues of network quality quite so substantially as you may have them still today.
It does seem to me to be a bit unseemly, though, to have these corporate titans, these big elephants, if you like, squabbling in such a public way. I can see why they're fighting over the claim to be the best network. But at the same time, the whole thing does seem a little bit unseemly to me. I don't know what your views are, Richard.
Look, it certainly gives the marketing department something cool to do, right? Because guerrilla marketing and doing all these weird tactics to just get mentioned and exposure.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it's all about these days.
Yeah.
So the lines constantly get blurred with this type of thing. Lines get crossed. And also, I mean, the ASA, how much clout do they really have? I mean, with some of the businesses I've worked with, we don't subscribe to any of what they do. Obviously, you know, you just don't necessarily want the bad publicity that comes with somebody calling you out on something, I guess.
But then again, I suppose bad publicity is good publicity at the end of it. Any publicity is good publicity.
Any publicity.
Lars, in the 4GS fight that happened at the ASA, I mean, Cell C at the end of the day was the net beneficiary, wasn't it? Because the brand was being talked about.
Again, I would have loved to do without all these ASA submissions, etc., etc. It was an enormous, quite frankly, in my book, waste of time. Mm-hmm. It was over peanuts. It wasn't really, but it was, you know, it was fine. I mean, you know, in the end, there was publicity. In the end, people talked about it. People actually questioned. I think the quintessence was that, yes, you know, the whole thing was talked about. But again, I question the whole idea of the ASA as being relevant, because it's not that you are blatantly misleading somebody. I think arguably, if you look at Vodacom's network, it is an extremely good network. If you look at the amount of data they're carrying and the number of customers they're satisfying, they are certainly the biggest network, and arguably they're probably also the best network. And if you ask anybody, you know, who is on the Vodacom network, more often than not, they'll probably say, yes, this is working very, very well.
Yeah.
And for the ASA to say, well, you can't say that, you know, if the measurement is a consumer questionnaire, when the consumers say, yes, for us, it is the best network, and you put that out there, then I think it's absolutely fair, and I think mm-hmm. they should have all the right to do it.
I must ask you, if with the benefit of hindsight and knowing what happened, would you have launched the 4GS logo or campaign, or would you have done something else, given what happened?
Hindsight is always difficult, to be honest.
Sure.
I think we were, I think we understood that we couldn't call it 4G,
yeah.
Which is why we actually called it 4GS. And, you know, again, we didn't feel that we were misleading anybody. I think we were the most open operator in terms of customer criticism. When customers had something to say about it, they told us, and we tried to fix things. I remember many nights, answering Twitter, answering Facebook and other things. I think we tried to be open. We tried to be transparent. And I think we did that quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue was taken on by not consumers, but it was taken on by, let's say, the other side. And they saw that, you know, kind of we could potentially be dangerous. So they figured out ways how to stop us.
Right. Didn't T-Mobile US also call their network or use a term like 4G or something similar?
Actually, many operators in the US, in Europe, called it 4G. Nobody, frankly, gave a hoot about it.
Right. Even though it was 3G.
The original, there was an original definition that says if it's not 3G, then you can call it 4G. If it is, you know, all IP, blah, 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 blah. There was a whole set and again, you had it in Europe, where I think arguably consumer protection is much, much stronger than I would think it is in South Africa.
Mm.
And there was never a case in Europe or in the US, for that matter, of anybody saying you can't call it that. People essentially said, look, you know, you can call it whatever you like. Make sure that the product works. Make sure that, you know, you're not misleading in the sense that you're saying this is a medicine that works. And then you'd find out it's not a medicine. It's a placebo, but this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about marketing, and we're talking about a way of communicating.
What about, while we're talking about mobile generations, what about 5G? That's coming soon to some markets. I think the first commercial networks are going to be rolled out later this year in places like Korea and the US, and possibly in places in Europe as well. But what is your view of 5G as a technology, Lars? Is it transformational? Is it much more than the switch, say, from 3G to 4G? Or are we just talking about greater speeds here? Or does it change the industry?
I think the network vendors would like to see it as transformational. The talk about, you know, IoT running off this, et cetera, et cetera. Self-driving cars requiring millisecond reaction time in communicating with the network and the cloud. This could all very well be, but I think it's going to take quite a lot longer for a couple of reasons. A, to build up this massive network, you will need to build many, many more sites than what is currently available. You will need to have well-working fiber to every single site, you know, because otherwise you can't get the speed. The question for me is it something that sort of sits on top and sees particular use cases in a smaller area? Then it's going to sort of grow, if you want, organically. I think 4G as a technology is extremely good. It is so much easier to run than 3G. Mm-hmm. It provides fantastic speeds. You can, you know, if you use massive MIMO antennas, you can see incredible capacity gains, which will be needed. But for that, you don't necessarily need 5G. You can do this with 4G. So I think it's a lot of hype. And I think there's a lot of difficulties in rolling this out, where, you know, I think we haven't seen, we haven't really fully grasped how difficult it's going to be. And, you know, the benefit in the long run will definitely be there. But in the midterm, let's say the next 5 years, I don't think it's necessarily a consumer, let's say, a consumer product.
And probably quite limited in developing markets like South Africa. I'd imagine maybe a deployment in Sandton and the center of Cape Town just to show it off. But 4G will be a bit of the, and possibly even still 3G will be the predominant way that people get online for the foreseeable future.
I think you will see that the developing countries are very, very quickly shifting to 4G.
Yep.
Because it has tremendous benefits for the consumer as well as for the operators. The number of 4G capable handsets is growing incredibly fast, and they're getting, you know, they're getting very, very let's say you can buy them for very small money.
Yeah.
If you look at Joe in India, I think that is the example. There you can buy a, you know, $25 4G capable handset. Maybe it doesn't give you, I don't know, 100 Mbps, but it works. It works very well for voice. And so I think you'll see that a lot of the developing countries will shift to 4G very, very quickly, which hopefully will then allow to have more frequencies available for, again, putting 4G on it rather than 2G or 3G. And I think everybody's going to benefit from that.
Great. Well, the last item of news on our list this week is something I've actually put on here because I'm quite keen to get Lars's views on it. And that is the expiry of the net neutrality rules in the US. The Federal Communications Commission, led by Ajit Pai, a Republican, has allowed the Obama-era net neutrality rules to expire. So as of, I think, Monday this past week, they are no longer in force. Lars, what's your take on this? Is this good or bad for consumers?
I think there's a lot of black and white discussions. And I have a very good friend of mine who knows this market very well and who's looked in detail into the new regulations. And, you know, he believes quite strongly that this is not as bad as it's made out to be. A lot of the basic, if you want, protections are still there. There is competition. So, you know, I don't think it's as bad as it's made out to be. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be very upset with me saying that. But I think you need to look at it in detail. And if you do that, you'll find out it's not quite as bad. I think whenever you have regulation, you have to beware of the unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Either way. And I think to return it to a status that I think was prevalent about 3 years ago or 4 years ago when Obama changed it from, I think, Title I to Title II, you know, the internet was working before, and I think it's still going to work now. I think the key thing is that you have competition. The more you have no competition, then it gets tricky, because then, you know, you can't just shift from one provider to the next. But given that the competition, you know, is still working quite well in the US, and I believe that the government is probably going to say yes to the merger between Sprint and T-Mobile, I think that's going to strengthen competition and not weaken it, because in its current state, Sprint won't survive, because it simply doesn't have enough to survive, and it doesn't have enough to live. So for me, the discussion, I think, is more complex, and it's more a, this is good, this is bad, this is, you know, you need to look at it in detail.
Yeah, I think you're right. The whole debate has become so polarized, with people taking extreme positions on both ends. But I think you're right. In a properly functioning competitive market, net neutrality probably isn't necessary.
Well, again, you know, you have to define net neutrality. And if you look at it, again, in detail, you find that a lot of the things that are relevant are still there as basic protections. Mm. There's some bits that have been taken away, but they don't necessarily mean that it's not, that, you know, net neutrality is no longer there. I mean, take Google and take Facebook. You know, how free are we in deciding what we see on Google and on Facebook?
Yeah.
We're not. We're entirely steered by algorithms that, quite frankly, probably even the people at Google or Facebook don't understand anymore. you know, that's one of the risks, if you want, of AI. You know, there's always somebody who programs. You know, again, unintended consequences may follow. But I think from a legislational perspective, I don't think it is as bad as people make it out to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens here in South Africa, because the ICT policy white paper takes a very strong, hardline approach to net neutrality and its implementation. There's been no draft legislation at this stage, but certainly the government is thinking in the direction of introducing quite strong net neutrality rules in South Africa. So we'll have to keep a close eye on what they announce there. But that takes care of our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Winner and loser of the week. Don't actually have a winner this week. I've been racking my brain for about an hour before the show to come up with one, and I just can't. So I think we'll leave that blank. And our loser this week is Bitcoin, and I suppose people who've invested in Bitcoin, because the price is continuing to tumble. It's now down 60% since the beginning of the year. As you know, Rehat, I took a punt on Bitcoin a couple of weeks ago, watching it falling since then. So I'm a bit nervous about that investment. But Lars, do you play around in cryptocurrencies at all?
No, I don't.
No,
probably a smart move. To be honest, I don't understand. I was at some point. I actually had I had some bitcoins because a friend of mine told me, you have to go to this is really cool. Go to Mount Gox. And you can imagine the rest of the story. So I had bitcoins very early on. I lost them. I didn't replenish then, which probably was a huge mistake. But to be honest, I still have some difficulty seeing what can we really do with this. There's so many people who say it's going to revolutionize everything. But I'm not so sure. It's now a 10-year-old, if you want, technology.
Yeah.
And we have one application that has somewhat worked, which is called Bitcoin.
Yeah.
All the other things are still in experimentation stage. And I think we just talked about load shedding. If the usage of energy to create Bitcoin keeps rising the way it is, then I think by 2024, I think somebody has calculated, the entire electricity supply of the world will be used to mine bitcoins.
Which obviously
I don't
is
think
not going to happen.
Viable.
Yeah.
So I think there's many good things about it, but I think there's also a fundamental problem that distribution means can you really trust something? And part of what makes economy tick is that you can, you know, that you create a trust between two business parties. If I cannot control what is in there, then how can I trust it? So then you go back to some sort of central authority. It's a For me, honestly, it's very complicated, and I'm not entirely sure I understand enough about it. I have yet to see an application that really makes sense.
Fair enough. And you know what they say about investing in things you don't understand? It's probably not a good idea, which is why I don't invest in mining companies, for example, because I haven't the first idea what they really do, apart from digging stuff out.
Well, our mutual friend Simon Dingle would definitely disagree.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He is Mr. Blockchain.
Yes. You know, I had him on the podcast recently, actually.
And certainly has done very well with it. So, you know.
Yeah, kind of. Absolutely. I mean, anyone who bought into Bitcoin 5-6 years ago is still sitting very, very happy. It's the guys who bought in December when it was sitting at $19,000 or $20,000 that are crying into their beer right now, I think. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Rehab, let me start with you. What have you got this week?
So I've been playing with a new gaming notebook called the Lenovo Legion Y720. It's a new one that they launched. It's not, there's various models in the range, but the one that I'm playing with is kind of the mid-range model that goes for around 20,000 Rand. But it's a pretty great notebook all around. I mean, it's got a GeForce GTX 1050 graphics card in it, so it can run most games pretty well. As you know, we did some serious PUBG-ing last night, and this gaming notebook performed, you know, as good as what any gaming notebook should. The speakers on this thing is what stands out for me. It's pretty loud. It's the new Dolby Atmos.
Oh, nice.
One of the first notebooks with a new Dolby Atmos sound in it, yeah. So sound quality, even reproduced through any headphones, is pretty is pretty good as well.
Great.
Now, one of the most interesting features of this notebook is the fact that you can, or it comes with a Microsoft controller chip built in. So you can connect your Microsoft Xbox One controller directly to this notebook, which is pretty cool. That's all built in. So yeah, that's the Lenovo Legion Y720. I've really enjoyed playing with it.
Do you have the retail price?
It's about 20 grand.
Okay. Cool. We'll include a link in the show notes for that laptop if it sounds interesting to you. Lars, you're going to pick a drone, I believe.
Yes, I've been gifted a Mavic Air, and I'm playing with that thing, and I'm trying to learn how to fly it and at the same time shoot cool videos or take nice pictures. I'm not sure that my dexterity is quite there yet. Actually, I know it's not. but it's a lot of fun. It's amazing when you think of what technology is actually in this little drone. I mean, it's not much bigger than your hand.
Yeah.
And you think about what this thing is doing. It is absolutely remarkable. I mean, it's the mind boggles. The processing power in that thing is massive. The software that is written to stabilize it, you know, how it hooks into GPS, it is really it's one of those little tech miracles where you look at it and say, I can't believe this is possible, but it is. So it's fun.
And of course, you live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. So I'm looking forward to seeing some drone footage.
I would hand that comment right back, sir.
No, I think the Swiss Alps are prettier than Joburg's mine dumps.
I think South Africa on the whole is is an unbelievably beautiful country.
But
as a matter of interest, what are the drone laws like there? I mean, are you allowed to fly around all those beautiful parks where those mountains are, or just anywhere?
You are allowed to fly it. You have to register so that if something happens, they know who the drone belongs to. You have some flight exclusion zones around airports, around some military things where you're not allowed to fly. But in usual Swiss fashion, it's a lot about self-policing. But it's I think a very pragmatic way of looking at it. Not like in Nepal where you are not allowed to fly any drone nowhere. So typical Swiss fashion, a pragmatic way of looking at it, and trying to, you know, get people to be responsible, which I think on the whole works quite well.
Great. My pick this week is, you know, I'm always, and Rechad, I'm sure you're the same, you're always looking to record an interview or grab a snippet of audio. And I've never found a standard voice recorder for Android that that really works for me. The ones, the default ones that come with the phone are not that powerful. So I did some Googling and I found an app called Easy Voice Recorder Pro. There's a free version, but the Pro version comes with some pretty nifty features that I think make it worth paying for. I think it's around 45 Rand in the Play Store. And there is also an iOS version available for iPhone and iPad, which I haven't tried out. But it allows you to do all sorts, it gives you all sorts of control over the quality of the audio that you're recording. So variable bit rates, you can record in different audio formats like AAC, Wave, MP3 and others. And it's got full integration in the Pro version with Google Drive and Dropbox as well. So you can automatically sync your voice notes and recordings into the cloud once you've finished a recording. And it's pretty powerful software, and the reviews in the Play Store give it very high marks. And I've used it already to record a couple of interviews, and I'm very impressed with the quality of it. So if you're looking for a really good audio recording software for your phone, and you're not too happy with the built-in one, although I think the one on iOS is pretty good, the built-in one. But the Android one on my Samsung is it's okay, but it doesn't give you a lot of variability and control. So I really love this app, and I'm using it a lot. It's called Easy Voice Recorder Pro, and it's available in the Play Store. So go check that out. And guys, I think that's almost our show. We just need to do our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Eskom introduced stage one load shedding this week. When was the last time it was forced to load shed? And that was in 2015.
Second question. What was Vodacom Group CEO Samuel Yusup's total pre-tax remuneration for 2018 financial year? And we'll accept answers to the closest million rand. And if you guessed it, the answer is 50.3 million rand.
Lots of dough. A Martian dust storm covering a quarter of the planet threatens to end a 15-year exploration mission by a NASA rover. What is the name of that rover? And it's the Mars Opportunity.
Fourth question. A U.S. court this week allowed the acquisition by which giant U.S. telecoms company of which giant U.S. media company? And the answer there is AT&T and Time Warner. Two massive giants in that industry.
Two massive companies, and these massive mega mergers don't always end that well. So brave move by them, I suppose. Former Cell C CEO Lars Reichelt, who has been on the show today, who left the mobile operator in 2011, joined which Georgian telecoms operator in 2012? And unfortunately, Lars didn't give any hints during the course of the show. But Lars, let me leave you to answer the question.
The company was called Magticom, M-A-G-T-I-com.
Magticom, great stuff. Well, Lars, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show all the way from Switzerland today. Really appreciate you taking the time out. I know it's Father's Day today, so I'm sure there's some extra pressure on your time. But it's been really great to have you here, and hopefully we'll have you on the show again at some point in the future.
Was great to be on the show. Thank you very much, and I hope I will see you either here or in Barcelona or maybe in South Africa.
Yes, I haven't been to Barcelona to Mobile World Congress for a while, for a couple of years. So maybe it's time I headed up there next year. And if I do, I will definitely look you up when I get there, Lars.
Very cool, Duncan.
Great. Well, from Rechart, from Lars, and myself. Until next week. Cheers.